Screen Time with John Fardy.
Thanks to Airtainment, a new era in Irish streaming begins. Discover more at airtainment.com.
This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show, the cast of Paddington in Peru, including Olivia Colman, Antonio Banderas and the great Hugh Bonneville, chat to me about taking the bear to Peru. And the stars keep coming because I'll talk to Zoe Saldana and Selena Gomez about the remarkable new movie that hits Netflix, Emilia Perez. Plus, Chris Wasser will be here with the week's other new cinema releases, including the story of Pharrell Williams, told through the medium of Lego. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud, and it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on Newstalk. Good weekend to you all. I do hope you're doing well. I mentioned last week I couldn't commit to This Is Us because there were so many episodes. Lots of people got in touch saying, no, you really should. It's worth it. So I'm going to have to fit it in because they've told me it's worth the journey. For all six seasons, each season of which contains 18 episodes. You do the maths, but apparently even if I do the maths, it's still worth the sum, if you know what I mean. And talking of people getting in touch, I just want to thank whoever you are, the 4,000 new people who tuned into this show in the last number of months, according to the latest radio figures released this week. So my gratitude to you and indeed to all of you who listen week in, week out. I am most grateful. Now, there is a very busy show this week, as you heard from that lineup. But just quickly in TV, I want to tell you that Day of the Jackal on Sky, which is not the remake, it's a TV version, an episodic version of the Frederick Forsyth novel, great movie from the 70s. In this one, we have Eddie Redmayne playing a hitman, carrying out a seemingly impossible hit, and his actions come to the attention of a British intelligence officer. It's really good so far. I watched two episodes of it. A brilliant opening salvo with a murder that's going on in a building, and then it moves to another serious murder or hit that's about to take place over the coming weeks. I really enjoyed it so far. Just really entertaining TV. And I also want to quickly mention, we were talking about it on Pat Kenny this week, a true crime series on Netflix. And I'm kind of somewhat done with the true crime genre, I have to say, in that I feel like, I don't know, we've seen a lot of it before, you feel quite manipulated by it all. That said, one I watched lately is This Is the Zodiac Speaking on Netflix, all about the famous Zodiac killer, serial killer from San Francisco in the late 60s, that to this day remains an unsolved open case, even though there is very much a chief suspect. This series is all about that chief suspect. It's on Netflix. It's only three episodes. It's called This Is the Zodiac Speaking. I found it pretty gripping TV, I have to say, and I'm not the biggest fan of the true crime genre, but this is gripping, scary kind of stuff. And, you know, fact is stranger than fiction. This Zodiac killer wrote letters to the San Francisco Chronicle and they published them, and he contained kind of codes, anagrams and things. Bizarre stuff, and it's all captured in this, so it is a great watch. Incidentally, I was in the San Francisco Chronicle a couple of years ago with the great Bobby Kerr on a News Talk mission, and it's a great newspaper environment, or it was 5 years ago. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. This Is the Zodiac Speaking is a great watch on Netflix. And even if you think you're done with the true crime genre, as I feel of late, you will enjoy this very much. If you've been watching anything on TV that you'd like to share with me, you can email me screentime@newstalk.com, or you can tweet me John_Fardy. I still call it Twitter. Hey, even more reason to do so now, it would appear. Now, let's get to this.
So, tell me, young man, why was your aunt so interested in Rumirock?
We don't know, Mr. Hunter. The Reverend Mother said she was looking for something.
She was wasting her time. Rumirock is just a bunch of old stones.
Bunch of old stones that, according to legend, is the first step to finding El Dorado.
What?
Yes, that is Ben Whishaw. He voices Paddington opposite Antonio Banderas and indeed an actress called Carla Toose. And that is part of Paddington in Peru. Yes, the lovable bear is back. Paddington 2, as you may know, went huge. So they're very keen to return to Paddington. But in Paddington in Peru, it's good. Don't worry about it, folks. I've seen this twice this week I've seen it twice in the space of 5 days because I had to go to see it to interview all the people. And then I was invited to a family screening where my three children and my wife also accompanied me. So what we have going on is Paddington is very much still in Windsor Gardens with the Brown family. But when he receives a letter from the Reverend Mother, a guitar-playing nun from the home for Retired Bears, played brilliantly by Olivia Colman, news that Aunt Lucy is missing him dearly, he knows he simply must visit her. So he gets a shiny new blue passport. Paddington, along with all the Browns, heads out to Peru. And, of course, Mrs. Bird. But when they get there, all is not quite as it should be. And let's just say they go in search of Aunt Lucy. And they meet Antonio Banderas, who plays a riverboat captain who's going to take them on this journey up the Amazon or down the Amazon or across the Amazon. They are sailing on the Amazon. And it's a jolly, rip-roaring tale with Paddington the Bear in terrific, terrific form. So very enjoyable movie, which I saw twice. Now, Mr. Brown, the head of the Brown family, is played by the great Hugh Bonneville, who, does he need an introduction? Mr. Crawley from Downton Abbey, he was in The Monuments Men, he was in I Came By, all sorts of things. A brilliant, brilliant English actor, I suppose, who's kind of a national treasure. I've spoken to him a couple of times, and indeed the last time I kind of cheesed him off, as you'll hear from my interview with Hugh Bonneville. Nice to see you, Hugh. How are you?
Very good, John. Nice to see you too.
I'm going to start with an apology. I interviewed you for I Came By about 2 years ago, and my first question contained this ridiculous spoiler. So I won't do any of that this time. I won't mention the aliens coming at the end or anything like that. Tell me this, you know, he travels to Peru. That's not a spoiler. Did you think that was a lovely spin on where the story might go? Because I kind of did when I sat down to watch it yesterday. I thought, great, we're heading to South America. This is going to be a jolly adventure.
Well, absolutely. I suppose if the spirit of the first couple of films was to do with Paddington finding acceptance in a new environment, you know, he's been a stowaway from Peru to the UK and has found acceptance in the Brown family. Well, in this film, it's a sort of reversal in that he goes back to his roots, to his origin. Mm. And it's, I suppose ultimately it's an exploration of what does it mean? What is home? What does home mean? Mm. And is it where you were brought up or is it where you end up? How do you square the two? So that's a sort of a rather touching theme that runs through it, or is it at the heart of it? But yeah, otherwise it's a rollicking great adventure. The chance to go to this amazing landscape, as you can see, I brought some of it home with me.
Yeah, I know.
The chance to go to this extraordinary landscape and have a bit of exotica in the world of the Browns was real fun. So you know, the bear having come to a different environment, the Browns now go to one that they don't feel comfortable in and have to navigate as they process up the river to try and find out what's happened to Aunt Lucy, who's gone on an adventure of her own.
Yeah, indeed she has. What is it? It's probably a big question, but I'm going to see it again on Sunday with my three children, you'll be pleased to hear. And they're very excited. There is a Paddington teddy in our house, but I won't get into that with you. But that's true. I'm sure everyone says that to you. But have you ever distilled what the magic is about this little bear that he's, you know, a generation after generation seem to love him and his marmalade sandwiches?
I think it comes down to something quite simple that I recall. Well, first of all, I recall reading him as a child, and he became very personal to me because he was the first fictional character that I could read for myself. I didn't need mum or dad or someone else to read it to me. And so that was very important. So his voice and his company were very important to me when I was learning to read and growing up. And so I felt very protective of him in that sense. But also, I do think that because we've all been, you know, to a new school or to a move to a new town or a new country, and we've all been strangers in a foreign land in that sense, that we can identify with him. And so therefore we recognize his vulnerability, because we've all been vulnerable at some point like that. But also, like him, we've got, well, hopefully most of us have got a spirit of curiosity. Paddington's quite a serious-minded little bear, and he wants to get the world right. He wants to understand more, and he wants to help. But unfortunately, he always manages to, as it were, knock the paint pot over in the process. But as with all good stories by Michael Bond, the paint is cleared up by the end and all is well. So, you know, Michael used to write these beautifully structured sort of three-act stories. You know, there's the outset of what the mission's going to be. There's the mission going wrong, and then it's all resolved happily. Yeah. So I think we know that for all the pickles he's going to get himself into, hopefully, fingers crossed, he'll come back to 32 Windsor Gardens at the end, and the marmalade sandwiches will be intact.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Tell me this. I mentioned I spoke to you before, and every time, despite me irritating you with spoilers, you always seem very jolly, and I've seen you in interviews. And yet I was thinking yesterday in the cinema, if, you know, every actor kind of has a thing. I was talking to Kevin Bacon a few weeks ago, a little name drop for you, and I was talking to him about his smile. That's the thing I remember. But you do Hasselt very well. That kind of, oh, cripes. We're in a, like, you have a facility for being hassled and addled, and yet you seem quite a contented person, the little I know of you. Have people remarked on that before? And I'm wondering why you think you do have such a facility for doing Hasselt so well.
Oh, that's an interesting point. I haven't had hassled before, but I'll take it. I'm very happy with being hassled. I don't know if that's a stock in trade. Then, but as I was saying to Richard Gere just the other day, his stock in trade is being incredibly cool on camera. I think, you know, one person's hassled is another person's incredibly cool.
Yes.
But I don't know. If I am hassled, it's made me a living, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm keen not to piss you off again after the last time. Lovely to see you again. Stay hassled and jolly and water the plants, won't you?
Thank you. Cheers. All the best.
Hugh Bonneville there, promising I wouldn't irritate him again. The very nice Hugh Bonneville there, talking to me about Paddington in Peru. And sorry, Paddington in Peru is in cinemas from this very Friday, the 8th of November. And I've seen it twice, and I'm recommending it. Now, Antonio Banderas stars as the riverboat captain who is going to take Paddington and the family up the Amazon. And the mother superior, so to speak, in the home for retired bears where they first go to is played by the brilliant Olivia Colman. I'm not going to give Antonio Banderas and Olivia Colman any kind of introduction. If you don't know who they are, you may be listening to the wrong show, my friends. However, they were both in Paddington in Peru, as I mentioned, and I spoke to them about the adventure of it all. Olivia, I was talking to Willem Dafoe a couple of weeks ago, just a little name drop
for you there.
As you do. And he was talking about how in Beetlejuice, I said to him, you know, it makes sense that you're in this. And he said, yeah, I always wanted to be in a Tim Burton movie. You're very close to becoming what they call a national treasure in the UK, winning Oscars and all that kind of thing. Was there a quiet delight when you were asked to be in this other national institution that is Paddington?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but I am one of the biggest Paddington fans ever. Adore him, always have done since I was little, since the 70s programs. And then when these films came out, I watched with my children. So I was so excited to meet Paddington and be in the films.
Antonio, you're a great actor, as most people know, and most people agree. But is it a strange headspace for an actor to be acting opposite someone or something that isn't another human being on some level?
It's not a human being, but it's, as you said, a national institution. So it's complicated. You know, you just want to be there. No, we have been commenting before that we work with a little person called Lauren, a woman that is phenomenal. She has been in the three different movies, just giving, you know, the replica to actors that have to play with, you know, at some moment she disappears out of the set and then you have your marks and you just play. But you had before the rehearsals with her. And so she allowed you to create the character with somebody that is looking at you, that is talking to you. Mm. And it was very important. And it's because I have done other movies in which I have to do this kind of games and they tennis balls and stuff like that. So you're talking with nobody. It's more complicated. But having a human being there that actually understands the character and actually played the character very well, it was very important.
Yeah, I can imagine. Olivia, I was saying to Hugh when I spoke to him yesterday that I noticed in the movie he does a hassled thing very well.
No one does it better.
Yeah, well, that's what I said to him. He may have been slightly offended. I don't know. What I notice you do very well is, and I've seen it in other works and you do it, and it's without giving any kind of spoiler, it's very hard to tell if you're a goodie or baddie sometimes, because you give this smile whether you're a goodie or a baddie. And it's wonderful. Have people commented on that to you before, that you're smiling at us and I'm like, ooh, this is good or bad? I'm not sure. Let's see what happens here.
Could be.
Yeah. Oh, I quite like it. No one said that before.
Okay. Excellent. So this is a first.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
I like it.
Good. Antonio, can I just ask you, I've been watching you for years and I wonder, and a lot of the things I've actually seen you in is with Pedro Almodovar movies. And I wonder, what is it when you look back, when your relationship with him, that he gives you, that you keep returning to that partnership?
With Pedro Almodovar, basically, if I look back in the 80s, we broke all the rules of the Spanish cinematography of the time. And it has to do with, you know, a country coming out of a dictatorship and getting into democracy and getting into the use of freedom and in many different aspects. So, you know, and all those early movies of Pedro Almodovar, we knew that we had to actually be patient for an audience, a Spanish audience, that had to metabolize, you know, messages that were sent from his movies. So in a way, we were feeling like we were just expanding human knowledge about, you know, the human spirit through his movies. We were conscious, actually, at the time that we were doing that, because we were conscious of the reality in which we were living. Then Pedro Almodovar developed, of course, you know, and he got in different territories, but he's still exploring of the complexity and the depth of the human mind and the human soul. For me, has been and the influence of Pedro Almodovar in all my career has been enormous. It's 8 movies with him, and probably in the future we're going to work together again.
Yeah.
Great. It was great. Yeah.
Lovely. Well, we're out of time, Olivia. If I had more time, I was going to tell you that I never tire of Peep Show. And no matter what you do in the future, I will just always think of you in that wonderful role. And it's delightful to see you transform into like an Oscar winner, but it's still always Peep Show for me. So
thank you.
Lovely to see you both. Thanks a million.
And you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Antonio Banderas there, and indeed Olivia Colman discussing Pedro Almodovar and Peep Show. Well, not, I was just telling Olivia Colman how much I liked Peep Show. And also, of course, talking about Paddington in Peru, the third iteration of Paddington in the Paddington Bear series. There is something funny in it, in that I was struck by Paddington gets a blue passport. He's an emigrant in this. Well, he's always an emigrant. That's the whole story of him. But he travels back to Peru in this one. So to me, it seemed that maybe there was somewhat of a, you know, an emigration parable in this. So the movie was directed by Dougal Wilson and Rosie Allison was the producer. And I spoke to them earlier in the week as part of this whole thing. And I asked them about the kind of parable or immigration parable that might be going on in Paddington in Peru. Dougal or Rosie, either of you can answer this. You know, I was very aware of his blue passport and the phrase blue passport I'd heard a few years ago in relation to something big that was happening in your country. And then they go off to Peru where the Brown family are strangers, you know, and I don't want to be too heavy and pretentious about it, but ideas of identity and even the big B word, was that in the air of this for you guys, in the air of the movie?
Well, we've worked very hard not to politicize Paddington. We like to keep him above the fray and keep everything very light touch. But obviously, Paddington is the quintessential immigrant. He's an outsider who always has a fresh eye on the world, and his story is one of where is home, where do I belong. So that's part of the story for sure. It's his identity, it's family, it's belonging, it's home. So That's part of it, but there's a lot of other things that go on in Paddington too. But
Of course. Yeah.
And you know, the blue just happened to be the colour that, with the passport that we were issued.
Yes, of course. And Dougal, tell me, I spoke to Hugh, I spoke to Antonio, Olivia already today and yesterday. And, you know, there's just such fondness for this little bear. And I have three children who I'm taking to it tomorrow, who it's big in our house too. And I'm seeing it twice this week, you'd be pleased to hear, because I had to see it to talk to you guys. And now I'm taking my children again. But I wonder, is it like, it's so beloved? Is it, you know, in the age of making movies, it's always a hassle. Is it easy to get people? I mean, you have big stars in this, but there's such affection for the character. Is it like an easy sell nearly to get these big Hollywood stars when it's Paddington?
Well, when we first sent the script to Olivia, I believe she got back the same day saying...
Not quite the same day.
Okay.
She read the script first.
Okay. Yeah. And then, anyway, she got back pretty quickly saying... that she'd be delighted to be in it, and she's already learning the guitar. So that was pretty good. And it was a similar, pretty fast response with Antonio. So that was very lovely to hear and get, and obviously gives you confidence having people interested. Yeah, I think it's probably a special appeal about Paddington. You know, it's a lovely thing to be in, and I think that probably... everyone wants to see themselves with Paddington on screen, interacting with him. You know, it's quite magical when you finally see that, which, you know, happens quite late in the process.
Yeah, director Dougal Wilson and producer Rosie Allison there talking to me about the motif of kind of emigration and stuff in Paddington. Now, the Brown children are back in the form of Jonathan and Judy, the two Brown children, played by Madeline Harris and Samuel Jocelyn. And they've grown up. They're kind of moody teenagers in this. And there's another child in it, in that the actress Carla Toose plays Gina, who is the daughter of Antonio Banderas. She's on the riverboat with Captain Hunter, and she's kind of his partner, I won't say in crime, but she's certainly his partner and has his best interest at heart. So I spoke to Judy and Sam Brown, played by Madeline Harris and Samuel Jocelyn, and also Cara Toose, who plays Gina, about the growth of their characters in Paddington. Madeline, you know, I have three children, and I've been, the oldest is 11 now, so I've been watching these movies kind of for the last 10, 11 years. And I've seen you grow up in each one. And here you are playing a kind of moody teenager in this one. Is it strange that people like me in the world see you grow up? Most people just grow up, but people are watching you do it.
I mean, yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's weird for us as well. You know, I think my little sister, I've got a little sister, we've got quite a big age gap, and she's 12, which is how old I was when we filmed the first one. And sort of seeing her and realising how young she is crazy to me, because it's like, oh my gosh, we were really young. Yes. Like, we were really, really young.
You were.
And and yeah, so sort of coming back years later, it's, you know, it's a decade of our life. It's incredibly nostalgic, but it's wonderful. It's really wonderful to know that other people's kids have grown up with it alongside us.
Yeah. And Sam, you know, you're... I don't have teenagers, but I felt like throwing you out of your room. Was it fun to play that kind of guy who wants to sit in his room all day and might actually be very smart, but, you know, wants to be left alone by his parents largely?
Yeah, no, I think every teenager has that sort of that moment in their lives where they don't want to do anything and they don't want to be bothered. But I think, you know, in this film, for Jonathan, it was sort of getting out there. And I think that's sort of a key message to lots of teenagers who are a little bit sort of within themselves. But ultimately, when you get older and when you're a teenager, you know, flourishing in what you're doing.
Yeah. So I think that's key. And Carla, it's an obvious question, but, you know, this was a pre-established world with Paddington. What was it like to come in and meet this strange, wonderful place?
I mean, a dream. It's the same answer all over the game, but it's just a dream. I don't have much more words. It's just...
Well, you got to say something.
Wonderful cast, wonderful crew, wonderful country to be in. It was my first ever movie, not speaking Spanish, so it was just a big challenge for me too. And yeah, I just wish this isn't the last one and we keep on going, because I loved it.
And Carla, is it true that from the production notes I read, when you were six, you kind of pleaded with your parents to almost let you certainly study to become an actress.
Yeah, I had my father actually works in the cinema industry, and he didn't want me to be an actress because he knew it was a really tough journey. And yeah, I had to beg them to let me go to theater school. So, but then here I am. So maybe I did a good job begging.
Madeline Harris and Samuel Jocelyn and Carla Toos there talking to me about the roles in Paddington in Peru, which is in cinemas from the 8th of November. It's a delightful watch. It really is. And it's that delightful Paddington with marmalade sandwiches. And there's a nice kind of Amazonian adventure in it as well. So listen, that's Paddington in Peru. And the stars continue after the break in the form of Zoe Saldana and Selena Gomez. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talks TV and movie show. Now, I'm going to play you something. I promised you many times in the past I'd never do this, but here goes.
¿Y usted?
Yo soy su mujer. Soy Jessica del Monte.
Rita Mora Castro, soy la abogada, trabajo con su marido.
Sí, me imagino, pero ¿qué hace para él?
Muchas cosas.
¿Es cierto que nos va a sacar del país?
¿Mande?
Are we going back to the United States?
Sabe que yo no sé, no estoy enterada de esas cosas.
Yes, that was a clip mostly in Spanish, which I hate doing. And I don't think I've ever done before because there was a famed, well, now defunct RTE art show many years ago that used to do it all the time. And it personally drove me bananas. But I'm doing it because it seems rather appropriate. That is a clip from Emilia Perez, which we reviewed a couple of weeks ago when it got a cinema release. And Chris Wasser gave it 3.5 stars. I gave it 4 stars. It is now on Netflix from next Wednesday, the 13th of November, globally. And Emilia Perez is from the pretty remarkable director, Jack Odard, who gave us The Beat My Heart Skipped and A Prophet, two brilliant movies, as well as other things. And in Emilia Perez, we have Zoe Saldana playing Rita, a promising young lawyer who's kind of held back by gender and skin color, who's propositioned by a Mexican cartel boss, Manatez, played by the trans actress Carla Sofia Gascon, who seeks discreet assistance in transitioning to a woman. When this is done, Rita is to help her fake the death of Manatez, transfer his wife and sons to Switzerland, and Manatis will reemerge as Emilia Perez. A fascinating premise. And what is amazing about this movie is that it is a lot of things. It's a musical, and a very strange musical where these musical numbers just come all over the place. It has crime going on, obviously, because it's about drug cartels and things like that. It's about identity politics. It's a thriller. It's a drama, it's a musical, it is really genre bending in a way that I haven't seen in a long time, I have to say. It swept the boards at Cannes, and Carla Sofia Gascon was the first trans actress to win Best Actress, and there's talk that might happen at the Oscars. We'll wait and see. It's a powerful, really, really interesting movie. Now, Zoe Saldana plays the lawyer who's going to help Manatus transition to Emilia Perez. Selena Gomez plays Manatus's wife and the lady who's going to be shipped off to Switzerland with her children. The good news is I got to talk to Zoe Saldana, who has one of the most successful acting careers in that she's been in Avatar and the Avengers movies. So she's part of the most influential franchises of all time. Selena Gomez, a wonderful actress and indeed musician who has done all sorts of things. The voice in Mavis in Transylvania is very familiar to her, but she's on TV. We rave about her on this show in Only Murders in the Building, and a very successful musician, of course, outside of her acting, and a child actress to boot when she first started. So I got to talk to Zoe Saldana and Selena Gomez about Emilia Perez. Hello, everybody.
Hi.
So this is all very awkward, isn't it? But thank you. Thank you for doing this. The movie's fantastic. Zoe, greetings from Dublin, Ireland, by the way. That's where I am.
Hello.
Zoe, Zoe, if I can start with you, you know, I didn't know anything about this movie, and sometimes that's a good way to see a movie. And I was like, what the hell is this? And I mean this as a compliment. It's so genre bending, like it's a thriller, it's a crime drama, it might be some kind of social piece, gender politics, all sorts of stuff. I assume when you get a script like this, you go, by God, I got to do this.
Yes. That's exactly it, you know, to be a part of a story that defies just the gravity of like social tropes is what artists sort of live to do. What we were not expecting, we knew how special this movie was for us, but we were not expecting was this warm and abundant reception, you know, that we have been receiving since the movie premiered in Cannes. That surprised us. I mean, this is a niche of a niche movie. It's in Spanish. Yeah. It's an opera. It's a musical. It's for women. It's for Latina women. Like everything, and it's Jaco D'Art. It's like super independent movie. Everything about this meant, oh, you know, like maybe the 4 million people that watch it will like it. And And I'm giving a number. They may very well be that number, and we'll still be super grateful. But that wasn't the case. That theater in Cannes was filled with 3,000 people. And I remember a year before we went to Cannes, Selena, Edgar, and I, we made that promise that we were going to stand by those steps and wave back. But also we were going to make a prayer going, please, please, please like it. Please like it. Please like it. And the reception just in that auditorium was palpable, and it was humble. Yeah. It's truly humble. Yeah.
Well, good. Selena, you know, one of the things it does with is plays with concepts of good and bad, and there's maybe even a Robin Hood element in terms of where one of the character goes. And in terms of your character, I mean, when we first meet her, and I don't want to give too much away, I was sympathetic to her as a mother trying to mind these children. Then as the story goes on, maybe she makes some different choices, but I'm wondering, you played her, how do you see her? I guess I'm asking you, is she a good or a bad person or somewhere in between, like maybe us all?
I don't think it's necessarily that she's good or bad. I think she's lived a lot of her life. Obviously, I'm a bit younger, so I think
yes.
Lived a lot of her life in control, not necessarily in control, but having, you know, rules and everything against you that just won't let you. She has no answers. She's confused. She's moving, and she gets frustrated, and that turns into anger. And then you see this vengeful side, and then you somehow you see the realness of the love she had, and it's not just one dimensional. That's what I loved about it.
The movie is certainly not one dimensional at all. Was it important for both of you? You know, I'm a white male talking to you from a European city. Nearly everything I watch, unfortunately, is in English. Was it important to this movie could be quite mainstream and it's largely in Spanish? Was that important for both of you? I'm sensing it was.
Yes.
I mean, we hoped for that, but genuinely, you know, we don't know if people would want to read subtitles or spend the time,
But they did.
They did.
They did.
They did.
And I think that what's beautiful about Emilia is that in any language that it would have been in, it would not deter sort of like the nature of this story. And it's an emotional story. It's a provocative story. It's audacious. It is fresh, but it's also important. And what audiences are sort of communicating back to us is that it's not a film that you go in and you have thoughts on it. It's a film that you go in and you have feelings. You just allow yourself to feel it, because this movie is going to make you feel. It's going to challenge you. But Jaco D'Art is known to do that. He starts with characters that you sort of go, by all means, these are beyond redeemable characters.
Yeah.
These are characters that I have to judge. Why they should know better. They should do better. They should do all these things. And he takes you through their journey. And in the end, you're rethinking how you're feeling about them.
Absolutely.
And how you're judging them and whether or not you should be judging them. And that's exactly what he did with Emilia and Jesse and Epifania.
Can I just say in closing to Selena, Selena, I've been doing this job a very long time and I've spoken to all sorts of famous people. I have a 9-year-old daughter and for the first time this morning, she was impressed because she said to me, "You're talking to Selena Gomez." And then she said, you'll appreciate this, "Why is she talking to you?"
Oh! So,
I wanted to share that with you.
Thank you so much. And tell her I said hello and it was a pleasure talking with her dad.
Thank you so much. Continued success, guys. Thanks a million.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Selena Gomez there saying hello to my daughter and also Zoe Saldana talking to me ostensibly about Emilia Perez, which is a 4-star movie for me. It's great to see it in the cinema, but it is now on Netflix from next week, November the 13th. And as I said in that interview, genre bending in a way I haven't seen before. So check it out from next Wednesday. A trip of a movie that isn't quite like anything else you'll have seen before. Up next, Chris Wasser reviews the week's other new movie releases, which include a biopic of Pharrell Williams of sorts. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time News Talks TV and movie show. Now we spoke a lot about Paddington earlier in the show, but there are some other new cinema releases. Chris Wasser has been busy at the cinema for us, as he is often on a week. And I'm delighted to say we're going to be talking about, well, I'm not sure if I am delighted. I'm pleased. A Pharrell Williams biopic made out of Lego. That's literally almost true. And a new Barry Keoghan vehicle called Bird. Chris, hello. How are you?
John, I'm very well. How are you?
Very well. So listen, let's get to the Pharrell Williams piece. Like, I'm not actually entirely just taking the mic here. This is a biopic of sorts of Pharrell Williams with Lego.
Yeah, I mean, it's technically a Lego movie. And I mean, like several features around this film's release, I've referred to it as like whatever it is, the fourth or fifth film in the Lego movie universe. And that might sound a little bit off-putting. But it's certainly it's an original idea when it comes to, you know, music biopics, and I quite like the fact that and I'm not entirely sure how it was born, because, you know, like anything with Pharrell Williams, he kind of just like gets this, you know, mad idea. Usually it's a music idea into his head and he just runs with it. But at some point along the way, I think he first met with Morgan Neville about 5 or 6 years ago. Morgan Neville, the documentarian and filmmaker who gave us, you know, 20 Feet from Stardom. People might be familiar with his Bono on the Edge, a homecoming film that he did for Disney Plus there last year. They met and discussed, you know, a way to make a Pharrell Williams documentary about his life and career, but also kind of give it like an invented biopic treatment. And how exactly do you do that? Pharrell said Lego, and there was no going back. So it's basically an animated film where all the contributors and the central figure have been given this cartoon block makeover. And when I say all the contributors, there are an awful lot of famous faces in there. So it's the Pharrell Williams story, but you've got, you know, Jay-Z, Gwen Stefani, Chad Hugo from the Neptunes, who, you know, Pharrell came up with, and they formed a partnership and a band, and they're not talking anymore, but we don't need to get into that. But we've got all of these, you know, icons and kings and queens of pop and hip hop and rock and roll coming together for one big mission statement, and that is to remind us over and over again that the central figure is a songwriting genius.
Okay. And as we've discussed many times on this show, there, when it comes to a biopic, there tends to be this arc of early trauma plus musical genius, drugs, great songs, some in reverse order, then redemption. Like, Pharrell Williams is still very much alive. This is a Lego movie. I presume it's not necessarily following that arc.
No, not really. I mean, it starts with this kind of comical interview where you've got Lego Morgan Neville and Lego Pharrell Williams saying, you know, what way do you want to do this? Will we just do interviews? And it's like, oh, let's do something different. Then they bring us back through Lego to, you know, Pharrell's, but a very kind of cartoon fairy tale version of Pharrell's childhood and, you know, his big breaks and his first encounters with, you know, various legends in the music industry. You know, we see this very kind of very PG, sunshiny version of his childhood in Virginia Beach. You know, all of the part-time jobs that didn't work out for him. Producer Teddy Riley arriving in his town and you know, seeing Pharrell Williams and Chad Hugo, that's his, like, kind of, I suppose, is his musical soulmate, as the Neptunes, at this school talent show. We see all of that through Lego. I'm going to keep saying that a million times over. And then we kind of go into, you know, the big kind of discoveries when, you know, the music industry and particularly the hip hop world started to kind of really notice that this kid and also Chad Hugo, because there is two of them in it, had these kind of, you know, just complete genre busting beats. I mean, the stuff, the melodies that these guys were coming up with were insane. So it's kind of got, you know, going from this rags to riches sort of tale with a few little bumps along the way, but there's no real, how do I put this? There's no real drama, John, yeah. Because I mean, the biggest drama that this film has is somewhere around the 60 minute mark, when it's trying to tell us that there came a point when Pharrell kind of stretched his brand a bit too far, when he wanted to kind of have his finger in far too many pies. He wanted to be in fashion, he wanted to be in technology, he wanted to, you know, have a solo career as well as producing for, you know, everyone from Snoop Dogg to Britney, and he kind of just stretched himself a little too thin and the hits sort of dried up, and that's sort of the biggest obstacle in the way. So you might
this is a puff piece, but just through
Lego. Yeah, you know what? It's a beautiful looking film, and it's quite inventive. It's quite witty. The parts of it that I loved were, you know, when it really kind of took the mick out of itself a little bit, you know. And there's sort of a brilliant Lego reconstruction of when Pharrell and Chad went to meet Snoop Dogg, and, you know, gave him the beat and gave him the melody for Drop It Like a Toss. And you've got all of these, you know, hype figures basically running around this studio with a Lego Snoop Dogg spraying a PG fog machine. Now you can see right through that. You can see what they're doing there. So it is quite self-aware. It is quite witty. It is quite charming. But that charm sort of wears thin after the hour mark, as I say, because you start to realize that this film is all about kind of just saying, look at this melody maker extraordinaire. Look at how brilliant he is. Look at how, this is his genius. Look how many hits he created. But you realize that it doesn't really have an awful lot else to say about the man behind the music.
Yeah.
And it touches on points about, you know, his relationship with his parents and his relationship with his grandmother. You know, it touches on the fact that himself and Chad Hugo, who again, you know, they were like the John and, John Lennon and Paul McCartney of the hip hop and pop world, you know, in the early noughties, they kind of drifted apart, and it doesn't really explain anything why. It's just like, no, on to the next thing, on to the next thing. Okay. So unfortunately, great to look at, you know, very charming, and I like the fact that they did things differently, but it's about as deep as a puddle.
Okay, so inventive but puffy. So what are you going to say stars wise for Piece by Piece?
I think you'll probably come away with more questions than you had going in, but I will say, in a year where we've had this and we've also had Kneecap, you know, where you had like the performers playing themselves, give us more unconventional music biopics like this. It's definitely flawed, but I like to see music biopics doing something different. 3 stars.
Yeah. Okay, 3 stars. Well, I certainly, you know, admire the ambition of it. I haven't seen this, of course, but yeah, okay. Let's take a quick clip of Piece by Piece.
Go ahead on the set.
Hey, Pharrell.
Hey, how you doing, man? You know, it'd be cool as if we told my story with Lego pieces.
Seriously?
Yes.
Lego.
Just be open. It might seem
crazy what I'm about to say. When I was a kid, I knew I was different. And people would say, oh, that's an odd child. And that crushed my spirit. But I loved music. It was mesmerizing to me. I would see beautiful hues of light cascading. I just thought that's what all black kids did, stared into the speaker like, whoa. She's a fun
night to the sun. That is a clip from Piece by Piece, a Lego movie about the life and times of Pharrell Williams, which Chris Wasser gave 4 stars to. Now, something very different is an almost Ken Loachian sounding film called Bird, starring our own Barry Keoghan. Tell us about this, Chris.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, Andrea Arnold's films, they do have a Ken Loachian vibe. Not to say that she hasn't kind of got, you know, her own identity and her own voice when it comes to her feature-length presentations, but there is something quite Loachian about this setup. And Barry Keoghan, you know, Barry Keoghan is kind of front and center of the marketing on, you know, certainly in this country, but he's very much a supporting player and also very much playing the oddball figure again. So he is Bug, you know, and he's got his, that's his actual name, John, in this film, Bug, who is this mouthy Irish chancer living in the UK. He's a bit of a criminal. He always kind of has a scheme or two going, and he's a very difficult man to live with. He's actually, when we first meet him in the film, he's acquired what he calls a drug toad, and he hopes that by playing the right sort of music, and apparently this is a thing, if he plays the right sort of music to this toad, the toad starts to sweat hallucinogens and he can, you know, make money off of this. So that's where Keoghan is in this film. But actually, the film kind of, and all the events in it, play out through the eyes of his preteen daughter, Bailey, played by a wonderful Nakia Adams. And she has just had enough of her dad's troublemaking, you know, and this is, you know, her summer, she's off school, this is her story. And she's kind of going through that, you know, awkward transition from childhood to womanhood. You know, she kind of, she wants to be hanging out with her older half brother, who's in this, who's in, you know, he's actually acquired himself a bit of a gang. She wants to be taken seriously. She keeps telling everyone that she's an adult, but no one will listen to her. The only person who will listen to her actually is a complete stranger. And that stranger calls himself Bird, played by a brilliant Franz Rogowski. And he's just this kind of eccentric, you know, loner who just wanders into her life one day and starts talking about how he's trying to find his dad. He feels a little bit misplaced and he wants this kid to help him try and find his dad. And naturally, everyone around her is thinking, you know, who is this weirdo? Why are you hanging out with this weirdo? But again, he's the only one that sees her. He's the only one that listens to her. So you've got an awful lot going on there. You've got a vigilante teen gang as well. You've got Bailey's, her mother and her abusive new partner as well that she's trying to protect more siblings from. An awful lot going on in there. And it's, on top of that, a fantasy element too.
Okay. So when I mentioned the Ken Loach thing, it was two things. It was one, that kind of social realism, kind of dark, gritty urban setting with people trying to escape and finding redemption, but also just the bird I'm evoking, Kez. There is no bird that flies in the sky in this, is there? Or can you not say?
There might be, yeah. So okay, Bailey at the beginning, she does have a little thing for birds. She also has a thing for filming things of her own. You know, she kind of just likes to watch the sky and make these little films and kind of project them onto her wall in a bedroom that she shares with her older brother, because she and her brother and Bug and Bug's new fiance, they're all kind of living in this big house where they're essentially sharing a house with various other families. But she does have a thing for filmmaking and she does have a thing for birds. But the film kind of, it starts off as a very kind of grounded slice of social realism, but then it kind of stumbles into something else entirely when a man named Bird comes along. And I mean, look, you can probably guess where it's going. I won't say too much, but it is a bit of a fantasy at times. It is a bit of a coming age story. I think the combination of both doesn't really work. It's an awkward marriage, you know, blending that social realism with fantasy. It might have been better done with different characters, but with the ones that we have here, it's sometimes a little bit awkward. I just think there's too many ideas. I think it's a little bit disjointed. And I think as well, look, Barry Keoghan never gives a bad performance, I don't think, you know, and he is quite, you know, catching here, you know, and it is interesting to see him working with different filmmakers like, you know, Andrea Arnold and like Emerald Fennell. And he's always kind of put that, and like Yorgos Lanthimos and various others, he's always kind of had this thing where he wants to work with the best directors. He's doing that, but sometimes I don't think they get the best out of him. And as well, I'd watch the Saltburn references. Because there is one in this film where his character admits to loving Murder on the Dance Floor by Sophie L. Spexter. And I know what they're trying to do with that, but it just made me groan a little bit. So I'd watch that.
Okay, a bit too obvious. So what are you going to say stars-wise for Bird?
Great performances. Looking forward to seeing what Nakia Adams does. I think she has a very promising career ahead of her. Franz Rogowski is always excellent. And look, I appreciate all of the ideas in this film. I just don't think they came together that well. So I'm going to go with 3 stars. I think it's fair.
Okay, well, Nakia Adams sounds like one to watch. Barry Keoghan is on top form. It sounds like if the material around him might not have, or could have served him better, possibly. So that is 3 stars for Bird. Also 3 stars for the Pharrell Williams Lego biopic. I'll never get tired of saying that. Both of these movies are in cinemas from this Friday, the 8th of November. They've been reviewed wonderfully, as always, by art journalist and film critic Chris Wasser. Chris, thank you.
Thank you, John.
Chris Wasser there with the week's new movie releases. That's it for this week. I did mean to mention earlier in the show that taking place next week in the IFI in Dublin is the French Film Festival, the IFI French Film Festival, taking place from the 13th of November to the 24th. Over 35 titles for the cinephile in your life, or just the cinema enthusiast. And I know one of them is a biopic of sorts of Maria Schneider, the actress from Last Tango in Paris. So that's the French Film Festival at the IFI. To find out more, ifi.ie is the website. I wanted to get that in. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch with me at any stage, John_Fardy is my Twitter handle, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. I'll just remind you, this show is available to podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud, and it's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on News Talk. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the remainder of your weekend. Have a safe week ahead, and I'll talk to you all next week.
Screen Time with John Fardy.
Thanks to Airtainment.
Saturdays at 6 p.m. on News Talk.